Attention, attention. This is History Lost in Time.
And welcome to episode 79 of the History Lost in Time podcast. This podcast is available in both German and English and has a presence on YouTube, Spotify, Podcast.de, Blue Sky, and Instagram. Additionally, there is a music-based companion project on YouTube titled HLIT AI Music.
The topic of this episode.
With this episode, in which I will discuss the battleships Bismarck and Tirpitz, the series on German battleships that actually existed comes to an end. I might produce one more episode covering the planned successors to the Bismarck and Tirpitz. After that, however, I will move on to cruisers or battlecruisers. Naval topics will certainly continue.
Political agenda and background.
None.
The sources that were used.
Günter Kroschel, August Ludwig Evers, The German Fleet, 1848-1945, Lothar Eising Verlag, Wilhelmshaven, 1962, 3rd Revised Edition, 1964, Hans-Jürgen Hansen, The Ships of the German Fleets, 1848-1945, Bechtermünz Verlag, Authorized Licensed Edition for Weltbild Verlag, Augsburg, 1998, Caius Becker, The Kriegsmarine, Neuer Kaiser Verlag, Klagenfurt, 2004, Caius Becker, Damned Sea, Gerhard Stalling Verlag, Oldenburg, 1971, Erich Räder, My Life, Volume 2, From 1935 to Spandau, 1955, Fritz Schlichtenmeier Verlag, Tübingen, 1957, Caius Becker, Eyes Through Night and Fog, The Radar Story, E.S. Mittler and Sohn GmbH, Herford, 1980, Janusz Pikalkiewicz, Naval War, 1939-1945, Bechtermünz Verlag, Authorized Licensed Edition for Weltbild Verlag, Augsburg, 1998. Whenever I plan an episode, I always ask myself, what can I share that might not yet be common knowledge? With battleships like the Wittelsbach class, which receive very little publicity, this isn't difficult. With Bismarck and Tirpitz, however, it is virtually impossible. Consequently, this episode is unlikely to offer any revolutionary new insights. Instead, it will provide a solid foundation of knowledge. Information that naval enthusiasts likely already know anyway. However, those with little to no prior knowledge should at least gain a basic understanding here. In the last episode, covering Scharnhorst and Gneisenau, I mentioned Bismarck and Tirpitz, but referred to them as sad existences. Why? When it comes to battleships, the gap between public renown and actual impact is often vast. Almost no one is familiar with the workhorses of the Imperial Navy's battleship fleet, such as the Nassau and Helgoland classes. Bismarck and Tirpitz, by contrast, are known to many. But just how effective were these ships? Bismarck served on only a single mission before being lost, and in the case of Tirpitz, one could argue that she was never actually deployed on a proper combat mission at all. But first things first, preliminary considerations for a fundamentally new type of battleship emerged in 1932. While the Deutschland-class armored ships were based on the strict limitations imposed by the Treaty of Versailles, and Scharnhorst and Gneisenau represented a hybrid of the armored ship design and older battlecruiser designs, Bismarck and Tirpitz could be built entirely from scratch and without any legal restrictions. The construction plans were completed in 1936. The ships were designed for traditional confrontations with the strongest elements of an enemy fleet as well as for heavy commerce raiding in the North Atlantic. Furthermore, the Kriegsmarine was responding to the construction of the Italian Littorio class and the French Richelieu class. Thanks to the Anglo-German Naval Agreement of 1935, the construction of these ships was also legally permissible from a foreign policy standpoint and justifiable within the framework of that agreement. Let's briefly review the technical specifications. The Bismarck displaced 50,300 tons, while the Tirpitz displaced slightly more, 52,600 tons, due to minor structural differences. Both ships measured 251 meters in length and 36 meters in width, with a draft of 9.3 meters. Their propulsion output stood at 148,000 and 161,000 horsepower, respectively, meaning the Tirpitz was equipped with the more powerful engines, just as with the Scharnhorst and Gneisenau, conventional steam turbines were utilized. The top speed for both vessels exceeded 30 knots, classifying them as fast battleships. Their operational range was 15,800 kilometers for the Bismarck and 16,400 kilometers for the Tirpitz. The initial complement consisted of 103 officers and 1,962 enlisted men. However, over the course of the war, the crew size on the Tirpitz grew to a total of 2,500 personnel, due in part to expanded anti-aircraft capabilities. Both ships were fitted with Fumo 23 Seetact radar systems, which boasted a maximum theoretical range of 25 kilometers, though their actually effective range under operational conditions was typically significantly lower. The main armament consisted of 8 38-centimeter guns housed in 4 turrets. These guns had a rate of fire of 2.5 rounds per minute and a maximum range of 35.5 kilometers. The secondary armament consisted of 12 15-centimeter guns with a rate of fire of 8 rounds per minute and a maximum range of 23 kilometers. The initial anti-aircraft armament consisted of 16 105mm guns, 16 37mm guns, and 20 20mm autocannons. Additionally, the ships carried 4 Arado AR-196 seaplanes. The armor protection reached a maximum thickness of 320 mm at the belt and 360 mm at the turrets. The Tirpitz was later fitted with 533 mm torpedo tubes, a feature not present on the Bismarck. Both ships were considered very stable at sea, though they lost a significant amount of speed during maneuvers. At low speeds, they responded rather sluggishly to helm commands. By international standards, Bismarck and Tirpitz performed well. However, contrary to what is sometimes heard and read, they did not outclass their contemporaries. They were significantly inferior to their Japanese counterparts Yamato and Musashi in terms of both firepower and armor. From 1942 onwards, the American battleships of the North Carolina class possessed vastly superior radar and fire control technology, as well as better 406 mm guns. The British King George V class was certainly a match for the German ships. Although these ships were somewhat more lightly armed, featuring 356 mm guns, they carried 10 of these guns rather than 8. Moreover, they were better armored and possessed superior radar and fire control systems. Construction of the Bismarck began in July 36 at Blohm & Voss in Hamburg. She was launched in February 39 and commissioned in August 40. The Tirpitz was built in Wilhelmshaven starting in November 36. She was launched in April 39 and commissioned in February 41. Thus, for the first 2 years of the war, neither ship was available for service. Theoretically, had an invasion of England taken place, the Bismarck could have been rushed into action. However, doing so would have meant throwing an untested ship with an untrained crew into battle against a first-rate adversary. Realistically speaking, the Bismarck did not become combat-ready until the spring of 41, the Tirpitz needed until the autumn of 41. In the media, both ships are often referred to as super battleships. There are also numerous videos along the lines of Bismarck vs. Iowa or Bismarck vs. Yamato. However, these usually consist of little more than a rattling off of technical specifications, failing to paint a realistic picture. Entertaining, certainly, but entirely detached from reality. The fact is that by the time these two ships entered service, the golden era of the battleship had already passed. On December 7th, 1941, the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor made this brutally evident to everyone. Yet even prior to that, the seas were already dominated by submarines and aircraft. Without modern electronics, as well as supremacy in the air and beneath the waves, large warships could no longer operate safely. And the histories of the Bismarck and Tirpitz demonstrate this in the most drastic manner possible. By April 41, the Bismarck was ready for action. In May 41, she was scheduled to break out into the Atlantic alongside the heavy cruiser Prinz Eugen to conduct heavy commerce raiding in conjunction with the Scharnhorst and Gneisenau, which were already stationed in Brest, while avoiding any confrontation with heavy British units. The German Navy was significantly outnumbered by the British and could not afford to trade heavy units. The breakout into the Atlantic was commanded by Admiral Lütjens as mission commander, while Captain Lindemann commanded the Bismarck herself. The ship's departure did not go unnoticed by the British, and a task force was assembled to intercept and engage the German formation. In the Denmark Strait, the German ships were sighted by the British cruisers Norfolk and Suffolk, and subsequently shadowed by radar. Shortly thereafter, the famous confrontation took place between the Bismarck and Prinz Eugen and the British heavy units Hood and Prince of Wales. The British were at a disadvantage here. The Hood was a battle cruiser whose armor could not match that of the Bismarck. The Prince of Wales was not fully combat ready and still had civilian workers on board, yet she was nevertheless thrown into battle. Moreover, the Prinz Eugen was initially misidentified as the Bismarck, causing the British fire to be misdirected. The Prinz Eugen had been steaming ahead because the Bismarck had knocked out her own radar system due to shock waves from her 38 cm guns. After a brief duel, the Bismarck scored a critical hit on the Hood, completely destroying the battlecruiser in a massive magazine explosion. The Prince of Wales came under the concentrated fire of both German ships and was heavily damaged. Lütjens ordered the engagement broken off and resumed the original course. The Bismarck had sustained slight damage, had taken on water and was leaking some oil, which made the British pursuit easier. This critical hit had been scored by the Prince of Wales. Here one might pose an interesting what-if question. Let us assume that Lütjens had disobeyed his orders, pursued and sunk the Prince of Wales, something that would have been entirely feasible given the condition of the British ship, and subsequently headed for German-controlled waters off Norway. The German Navy would thereby have sunk two heavy British units without suffering any losses of its own. The German ships would indeed have been hailed as super warships, and the victory would have constituted a massive propaganda coup, especially following the inconclusive Battle of Britain in the autumn of 1940 and the cancelled invasion of England. However, Lütjens would likely have faced trouble behind closed doors, for his orders were, after all, to avoid confrontations with heavy British units and to engage in commerce raiding. For this reason, he did not pursue the Prince of Wales, but instead resumed his original course. The British Navy mobilized every asset at its disposal against the Bismarck. Lütjens detached the Prinz Eugen from the Bismarck, and the two ships proceeded independently into the North Atlantic. A first British air attack resulted in a torpedo hit on the Bismarck, though it caused no significant damage. In fact, the Bismarck did manage to shake off her pursuers, but Lütjens was unaware of this. Believing he was still being tracked, he continued to send out radio transmissions that allowed the British to pinpoint his position. The Bismarck set course for Brest, France. During a subsequent air raid, Swordfish torpedo bombers from the Ark Royal succeeded in damaging the Bismarck's rudder, leaving her unable to steer and forcing her to steam in circles. This allowed the heavy British units to close the distance and launch an attack. Ultimately, the Bismarck was battered into submission by superior British forces using naval artillery and torpedoes. Of the 2,200 men on board, only 114 survived. The wreck was discovered in 1989 at a depth of nearly 5 kilometers. There were long-standing debates as to whether the ship sank due to artillery fire, torpedoes, or scuttling, but that is merely a technical detail. The fact remains, the ship was lost on its very first mission, having sunk only a single battlecruiser. For the German Navy, which, as previously noted, was significantly smaller than the British fleet and possessed very few heavy units, this outcome was simply not enough. A battleship that had taken 5 years to build could not be allowed to be lost after barely a week of operational service. In his memoirs, Admiral Reda explains in detail why he ordered the deployment of the Bismarck. He openly admits that the lack of air support was a weakness in the operational concept. The British were able to attack the Bismarck from their land bases and aircraft carriers, while the ship could defend itself only inadequately with anti-aircraft fire. No German aircraft carriers were available. On the other hand, Reda could not simply commission the construction of a ship as expensive as the Bismarck and then fail to deploy it merely because a mission might be dangerous. However, Reda openly acknowledges that he alone bears the responsibility for the loss of the Bismarck. Although not all of Lütjens' decisions are readily comprehensible, Reda stands by the admiral without reservation, resisting the temptation to shift the blame onto the fallen mission commander. For Reda personally, the loss of the Bismarck also signified a severe loss of trust with Hitler, who thereafter listened less and less to his navy chief, opting instead to increasingly act on his own intuition. Details regarding this can be found in chapter 14 of volume 2 of Reda's memoirs. Following the sinking of the Bismarck, no further attempts were made by heavy units to break through into the Atlantic. Instead, all units remaining there were withdrawn to Germany in February 42. The Tirpitz initially remained in the Baltic Sea before being redeployed to Norway, where she served as a potential threat to the Arctic convoys bound for the Soviet Union, as well as a deterrent against a potential Allied landing. Her only actual combat engagement took place in September 43, when, operating in concert with other German warships, she bombarded Spitzbergen and destroyed several targets there. However, no occupation of the island took place. On several occasions, the Tirpitz was nearly or actually deployed against convoys, yet she never made contact with the enemy. The convoys were either dispersed, as in the case of PQ-17, the greatest disaster in the history of British Arctic convoys, when the mere report of the Tirpitz's sortie triggered panic, or the Tirpitz was recalled. Instead, the Tirpitz was subjected to repeated British attacks, launched either from the air or by submarines. Consequently, the Tirpitz was equipped with increasingly heavy anti-aircraft defenses and required frequent extensive repairs. She remained a potential threat nonetheless. Given the German fuel shortages, however, any operational deployment had to be weighed with extreme care. A voyage by the Tirpitz entailed a significant consumption of fuel, resources that could otherwise have powered submarines, fighter aircraft, or tanks, which frequently yielded more tangible results. The constant waiting ruined the crew's morale and is, therefore, comparable to the morale issues that plagued the German High Seas Fleet during the First World War. After a series of heavy attacks, the British finally sank the Tirpitz in November 44 by using Lancaster bombers carrying the over 5-ton Tallboy bombs. Over 1,200 men were lost in the attack, while around 800 managed to save themselves. The wreck of the Tirpitz was scrapped between 1948 and 54. Thus, the fate of these two ships demonstrates that a one-on-one portrayal is strictly video game level. Warships operate within an economic military ecosystem, and the ecosystem surrounding these two vessels included aircraft and submarines. The Bismarck was ultimately finished off by a torpedo from an old-fashioned-looking Swordfish biplane, which robbed the ship of its maneuverability and left it drifting helplessly in circles. A mixed force of battleships and cruisers, engaging not in a one-on-one duel, but rather in a many-against-one assault, then delivered the final blow. The Tirpitz served, more or less, as a magnet for air raids and submarine attacks. She was ultimately sunk by super-heavy bombs without ever having had the chance to test her mettle against other battleships. Hitler frequently questioned the true value of these massive warships, and in light of their sobering fates, one is compelled, for once, to concede that he was right. Both vessels displaced approximately 100,000 tons. If one converts this material weight, the resources consumed by the Bismarck and Tirpitz could instead have yielded 116 Type 7C U-boats of the 1941 variant, or 4,000 Panzer IV tanks. Furthermore, their combined complement of roughly 4,400 men would have been sufficient to crew 88 U-boats or 880 Panzer IVs. The question remains whether, in the final analysis, that would have been a more sensible allocation of resources.
A few finishing words.
Another question is whether the construction of these two ships was, in the final analysis, a mistake for which the decision makers can be held accountable. This is a difficult question to answer. Admiral Raeder's concept envisioned the construction of a fleet possessing every conceivable capability, yet one that was inherently small. In other words, a thinly spread but generalist fleet. For this purpose, Tirpitz and Bismarck were indispensable, as the pocket battleships as well as Gneisenau and Scharnhorst lacked the necessary power. Had the plan, however, been to design a naval force, specifically for combat operations against Great Britain from the very outset, the heavy surface units, with the exception of the pocket battleships, should arguably have been dispensed with in favor of a singular focus on submarines. Such a fleet would have posed a far greater threat to Allied convoys, though it would have possessed significantly fewer general capabilities overall. Consequently, determining what was right or wrong remains a matter of perspective. The fact remains, however, that by the time these ships became operational, the strategic landscape had shifted so drastically that deploying them was fraught with extreme risk and offered little prospect of yielding tangible results. Even a coordinated deployment of Bismarck, Tirpitz, Scharnhorst, and Gneisenau operating as a single task force would have been a challenge the British Air Forces were capable of handling. Hence my verdict that theirs were truly tragic existences. Bismarck, with a mere 8 days of active service before her sinking, and Tirpitz trapped within a Norwegian fjord, constantly enduring British attacks until she was finally sent to the bottom, without ever having fired a shot at an enemy vessel.
Thank you! This was History Lost in Time.